You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 30 September. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Alex Dace, market volatility, how's he trading it, and is he seeing some value in some sectors? Chatting with Tim Holden, MD Caxton, and the future of the group, which seems to be moving a lot more into packaging. And then Andrew Bowman from Deal Leaders International. Is corporate governance still intact? What can we do about it? This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. So morning headlines, a great read on MoneyWeb, Checkers versus Woolies over the last decade. The two businesses are vastly different and, of course, vastly larger than they were in 2011. But a great comparison how they have grown over the last 10 years. And then from Bloomberg, ARK Innovation ETF offloads Tesla shares worth at least $250 million. That's the headline. But the story is that typically when the Tesla holding goes over 10% within that ARK Innovation ETF, Cathie Wood and her team do sell it down, so not unexpected. Morning markets, US was mixed overnight, S&P up 0.2, NASDAQ down 0.1%. Asia is mixed, Sydney up strong, 1.4%, Tokyo down 0.4%. Commodities green overnight, but that weakening trend is continuing. Gold, 1734. Brent, a little lower, 7725. And PGMs, palladium, 1850. Platinum, 950. The route continues in the PGM space. Rand, 1514. Top 40 opening call, looking for about 290 points up. That's about 0.6%. That as 10 cent trades 1.9% during the lunch break in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alex Dace in Thumbo Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning as always. I mentioned in the intro there, we're seeing a fair bit of volatility in the market. And I suppose we should preface it to say nowhere near the volatility we had a year and a half ago. And truthfully, it's relative to a market which seems to just have been going up, up, up and up. But how are you and your team sort of looking at this market? Are you using the drawdowns to buy? Are you moving into cash?
Yes, good morning, Simon. Certainly, as active managers, we do prefer some volatility as to just markets trending, because that does give you opportunities to every now and again buy at good levels and also sell at good levels when the share prices start rallying above the fair value. So, yes, so it's less than it's been perhaps 18 months ago, but it certainly has picked up, as you said, mostly due to some factors that's happening offshore. So we know, for example, that it does seem like inflation is going to remain sticky at least until the end of the year. That's causing some spooks there as well. You know, of course, in China, all the regulatory issues as well as Evergrande. Also commodity prices have been on a lot of pressure, and that's had an impact on the rand and impacts our markets as well. So if we look at South Africa, we still think, even though the banks have recovered quite a lot, we still think it's attractively valued at these levels. So if it does pull back any sort of levels, we think that's a good buying opportunity. Another one, for example, Mr. Price. I think it's pulled back about 10 or so percent the last month. For me, if you look at quality of management, the quality of balance sheet, that is still doing very, very well in the mid to lower end of the market. I think that's an area that you can pick up some good quality stock. And there's also quite a few small caps that we've liked over the last few months, which has rallied very, very hard off late. So always look for those opportunities in those particular segments of the market. And if you're a bit more brave and do believe that commodity prices can have some sort of recovery going in the end of the year or beginning of next year, then there's some opportunities there to pick up some stock as well. Businesses that, I mean, the balance sheet has been completely deleveraged from a few years ago, and they're paying good dividends. And if they don't do any particular CapEx deals or acquisitions, you know, it should be reasonable investments, assuming there's some sort of recovery in the spot prices.
Yeah.
So certainly there's quite a few areas I think investors can pick up some good opportunities.
Yeah, and I take your point in the brave and commodities, and I've been doing it. And I mean, time will tell if I'm being brave or being silly. We'll get that next year. In the commodity space, is it diversified miners? Is it PGMs? I mean, the coal stocks. I mean, Thungela has been going absolutely great guns. I mean, do you have a preference there?
Yeah, so I think I'm a bit more circumspect on iron ore. I must say, I do think iron ore market always notoriously difficult to say what's going to happen there, but I do think there is a little bit of some issues there. So be a bit concerned there. Perhaps you can still play an Afrimat locally if you still like that particular theme where you get that benefit. But I'm still cautiously optimistic about PGMs. Yes, palladium will probably retract a little bit, but I think substitution in platinum is quite viable. Mm-hmm. And also the supply-demand fundamentals in rhodium is still in favor of that, you know, of that shape, rhodium price going up over time, but it will be very, very volatile. And these companies' balances, we know, has been completely deleveraged. Gold is also not a difficult one, but if the spot prices can hold or recover, which is quite likely considering that, you know, if inflation continues to go up, real rates will further be negative, and that's good for gold. Remember, there's also a misconception of gold that gold is not necessarily a hedge against inflation. It's a hedge against unexpected inflation, and of course, negative real rates is something you need to look at. And if that holds, I think gold perhaps can get a bit of a bit, and it's not too bad, but certainly not as attractive as it was perhaps a year or so ago.
Yeah, and I take that point about unexpected inflation. I was digging around Implat, and I noticed that the prices they got for the last financial year, the current PGM prices are only about 5 to 10% down. So although we've seen a come off the average, they're still going to be making some cash there. We'll leave it there. Alex Dace and Thimble Wealth always appreciate the time. A poll today on our LinkedIn and Twitter account is exactly on that market volatility. As Alex says, if you're an active market participant, then some volatility is not a bad thing. How are you playing this volatility? Buying with both hands, being careful, or perhaps just taking your money and running? Have your vote, have your say on Twitter and LinkedIn.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Tim Holden, MD of Caxton. Results out when I was down at the beach, headline earnings per share tripled to some 75 cents. 50 cent dividend declared at the same time. This is a stock that's trading at around 8 rand or so. Tim, appreciate the time, particularly in studio. Really strong set of results. If we go back to comparing versus 2019, because of course last year was the year we all planned to forget. How's the business looking relative to 2019 numbers?
Morning, Simon, and morning to your listeners. Thank you for this opportunity. Yes, if one looks at our operating profits compared to 2019 pre-pandemic, we're actually very pleasingly starting to approach those levels. So we're not far off those levels. And if one analyzes where that has come from in our group, we are actually exceeded operating profits pre-pandemic in our commercial printing and our packaging, which came back very strongly in the second half of our financial year. The other sector that is lagging behind a bit is our newspaper publishing side, where it's taking a bit of time for the advertisers to come back to the same levels that they did in 2019. Having said that, coming into the new financial year, in the first quarter, we've definitely seen positive trends in that respect, and it shouldn't be too long till we'll get back to those pre-pandemic advertising levels.
Yeah, I did. I was down in KZN and I picked up one of your community papers. And it wasn't as thick as it is at times, but it was certainly thicker than it has been. And that's the key. And you're publishing, you know, people will say print is dead, except you publish, I mean, how many community papers is it?
It's around 110 papers.
Oh, these are weekly.
The weekly papers, and we deliver probably between 3 million to 3.5 million papers weekly, 52 weeks a year. So if you get your head around those statistics, you see it's an important distribution channel for large format product and price advertising.
Yeah, so if I'm ShopRite and I want to get to, you know, a vast audience, I can go to SABC, Sunday Times, I can also come to yourselves.
Absolutely. And we give them a footprint of 3.5 million households.
Yeah.
And with that, we get the community news that lends itself to the people in the household to read the advertising more.
You have exited magazine. I mean, that's one area which you're out of. Magazine printing is now over. You're moving very much into packaging as the sort of new focus or a new area. What sort of markets are you operating in the packaging space?
Yes, if one looks at our packaging business, we've really grown it over the last 7 years. It used to be around about 20% of our operating profits. It's now getting closer to 50%. And we've done that through acquisitions. One of the major ones, we bought a portion of Nampak about 7 years ago.
That's right, yeah.
And the markets that we operate in are, we actually are the number one or number two in those markets. So we're very big in the label market. So anything on wine, beer, spirits, canned labels. And we're number one beer label supplier, paper beer label supplier in the country. And then we're also very big in folding carton, anything in a box. But I think significantly when one talks our folding carton business is that we're very strong in the fast food category. So we are 100% supplied to McDonald's. We're 95% supplied to KFC, 100% Chicken Licken, and probably a 50% supplied to Nando's. And those markets grow. They are a growing market. They're always opening up more outlets and also doing product innovations. The other area that we're very strong on the folding carton side is cigarette packaging.
Mm-hmm.
We are 100% supplied to British American Tobacco. Obviously, they've been impacted by the illicit trade, and we felt that. But we see other opportunities into Africa for cigarette packaging.
Okay.
So those are the main markets that we're playing in at the moment.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you said packaging, I mean, our head always goes to e-commerce, all those take-a-lot boxes we're getting. But actually QSR, I mean, those quick-service restaurants. I mean, pandemic, we're eating more takeout than perhaps ever before. You've also got a 31% stake in Impact, which, of course, is packaging. Is 31% where you leave it? Do you look to push it up? Was it opportunistic and at some time you take the money and run?
No, we've been looking at Impact for a while, and we saw the opportunity in December of last year, and we bought in at a very, very nice price. It's more than doubled in value subsequently, and it really is a great company, we think, with great assets and good management, and our intention is to want to get to a controlled. We want to grow in the packaging market, and we see this as a really good asset that we'd like to get control of. But, you know, as normal, we're also looking for the right way of doing it and not necessarily overpay.
Yeah, that's a key point. And that brings me to the balance sheet, which is either described as strong or lazy, depending on the angle we're taking. I think during a pandemic, perhaps we go with the strong side. Close on $2 billion of cash. And that's an important metric because your market cap's only about $3 billion or so. I say only, but still. You've certainly done capital allocation over the years. You mentioned Impact. You mentioned the Impact deal, which I'd forgotten about from, about 2014 or theirs back. You're returning some of it to shareholders in dividend, but patently keeping it for opportunity.
Yes. I mean, always cash has been very strategic to Caxton's. We use it to enhance shareholder value by looking for good acquisitions. And I think the results that we've delivered here, there's one example of that where we took a small stake in a fiber to the home business and we made a 400 million rand profit. So we have a history of allocating capital properly. We're not going to buy everything that comes across us. We're going to do what we think fits perfectly with our business, and Impact is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd like to keep our cash to look at it, increasing our stake in Impact and enhancing earnings.
A final question, which is the raw material input costs, supply chains. I imagine, I mean, most CEOs I chat to, this has been one of their biggest challenges in the last year, aside from the actual practical people side of COVID.
Yes. You know, we import a fair amount of our raw materials. And coming to December last year, we saw the tightening in the global supply chain. And we took a decision to really build up our stocks, which has been a fantastic decision because we've been managed to gain market share in some of our markets where our competitors have actually been far too tight on stocks. We will continue doing this. We don't see this alleviating itself. And the other knock-on impact of that is that pricing is going up.
Yeah.
And our focus in this year is really is how we pass that through.
That's going to be my question. Are you able to pass it on to the McDonald's?
We have to. The price increases are too significant to absorb. So we have to pass them on.
We'll leave that there. Tim Holden, MD, Caxton, appreciate your time in studio this morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Andrew Bowman from Deal Leaders International. Andrew, appreciate the early morning time. An email which came across my desk earlier in the week with a subject line that I couldn't not read, and it was, is corporate governance still intact? And I mean, if we look back, African Bank, Steinhoff, EOH, and they're of course suing the founder for $1.7 billion. Tongaat, there certainly is there's been some issues back there, although it's been, it's four of them, and it's been a couple of years over it. The first question to you, is corporate governance dead, or is it just perhaps in need of some help?
Morning, Samia. Thanks for the time. I definitely don't think it's dead. I think it needs help. One can always argue there are these massive cases, and they've been picked up after the fact. I think the key thing is they've been picked up. We benchmark it. We deal with a lot of international acquirers, and, they still believe across the board, we have a relatively strong governance framework, irrespective of these isolated yet very material cases.
Yeah, and it is, as I said in the intro, it is four cases, and we all turn to them, but it's four, and I think African Bank was maybe 7 years ago, so it's not like it's one a week. Then the point is, I suppose, and it's just, so even absent perhaps of these particular issues, which you point out were picked up, is there still a good argument to be saying there's some areas that we can sort of, lines of defense that we can put up against fraud, and one of them perhaps being that audit committee, the subcommittee of the overall board?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think a lot more of the control and accountability needs to sit with the company itself. Mm-hmm. I think there's a similar argument, to say, well, do we include or increase the scope of the external auditors to look at fraud? But again, it's almost going to become part of your DNA within a business. So yeah, I think audit committees probably need to include that as part of it. But then at the same time, you've got to bolster your internal governance framework, controls and the likes to make sure that it permeates, through the layers or hierarchy of a business, and not rely on outside parties to try and pick up, an internal rot. I think that's a massive shift in the day-to-day governance of a business that needs to happen formally, with proper escalation and independent frameworks.
I take your point around that. I mean, the audit committee's great, and the external auditors are great, and the board is important, and particularly the non-executive. But it actually needs to be part of that corporate DNA. It needs to be internal compliance officers. It needs to be whistleblowers. It needs to be engagement with suppliers. It needs to permeate the whole way through an organization, which does make it a little more difficult for an outsider to see it, perhaps.
Look, it definitely is. I mean, I always, back in the day when I was doing articles and the likes, we always forget, auditors work on samples. They can't interrogate absolutely everything. So I think, I think there's a balance between it. But yeah, I think there definitely needs to be, some sort of better controls internally, a lot more transparency, and I think that's also one of it. And I think we forget companies generally are a far more controllable ecosystem than, say, a government is. So, that ability to, sunshine issues and hold people accountability and take action, because I think the consequence is critical as well to drive the right behavior. And I think the whistleblowing hotlines, whatever they may be, is critical, because that's often where, in very large companies, your tip-offs are going to come from.
And then, of course, I brushed over them, but that board of directors and in particular the non-executive directors, they're hugely important. And I know as an investor, when I'm looking at those non-execs, and there's one board which has got non-executives, independent non-executives who've served 23 years, and my respect is now that they're no longer independent. Those non-exec independent directors are hugely important as a sort of almost a counterweight within the board process.
You're going to look, absolutely. I think one has to remember also, the number of, I'm going to say, functional roles that they would play, fraud and detection being one of them. I think that, again, there's a challenge of they are exposed to a board pack. So whatever's there, and certain reports, There are ways to, you know, to filter what gets provided from an information perspective. But I think absolutely they can ask the right questions. And, you know, I think sometimes it is, you know, certain ratios out of kilter and the likes which could trigger it. So it's definitely an and strategy and, a symbiotic ecosystem, if you like. It's all of these. But I think a lot more has to be done internally to provide the right level of information and insights to the non-execs, to the audit committee, you know, and even to the directors. You know, you often think about it in these large companies, you know, how much information and, you know, directors have to work through. They're individual people. There's only so much they can do, you know.
Yeah, and then as from an outsider, you know, who are there and their track record, I suppose, to a degree also precedes them. Andrew Borman from Deal Leaders International, appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. Our poll yesterday on our Twitter and LinkedIn profiles. We're chatting with Skulk Lowe about the unbundling of the holdcos, RMI and Telkom, a less traditional holdco. But we asked you, is this a great way to unlock value? 70% of you, absolutely, you said yes. And then just under a third said, no, you actually quite like the holdco structures. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nicole, Eleanor, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.